Mel.
Saeed.
How you doing?
Oh my God, amazing.
I know. Another episode of Two Writers.
Talking shit.
Yes. Yes.
We've got a phenomenal guest in the house
today.
Yeah.
Yes.
Who's come to us courtesy of producer Kayla Guess.
Kayla Guess.
Hooked us up.
Hooked us up.
Hi, Kayla.
Kayla, what up?
Our guest today, the credits too long.
Too long.
Okay, you've got a Google on your computer, all right? We want to dive in with her. We don't want to give you her Wikipedia.
Yes.
Let's just say absolutely phenomenal credits coming to the table on top of being a writer-producer. She's also an entrepreneur. She is very well-known online and offline. Please welcome to the pod. Tanya Bhattacharya.
Hi. Thank you guys so much for having me. I'm very excited to be here to meet you two. Congratulations on this awesome podcast.
Oh my God, thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thank
Appreciate
you.
It so much. I mean, you're somebody that I followed on Twitter early on, like, because Twitter was some, like writer Twitter, maybe like 4 years ago, 5 years ago, was big, huge. Mm-hmm. And you were one of the first group of writers that I followed that I felt like was giving good info, and we, you know, so
thank you. I go sporadically off and on, you know, because it can be a lot,
it
especially
is.
In the last handful of years. Yeah.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
It's not even Twitter anymore. So
yeah. No, I don't even like to talk about it.
Yeah.
So Tanya, let's go back to the beginning.
Okay.
What was the first script in your TV writing career that like really hit? You know, that like opened a door for you that you just then ran through with the flames you're now running with?
The burned out flames that I'm still trying to ignite all the time. No, I had started out in features, I just want to say. So I had done that, and that's where I really feel comfortable too, because I started out in that format. But I write with a writing partner, Ali Laventhal. Mm-hmm. So we had actually written a feature together and then started writing together. And I would say that for me, really, the first thing that we wrote together that really hit was the script that got us into Writers on the Verge.
Nice.
And it was my first spec script, which was a Nurse Jackie.
Love that
which
show.
Was a, so we took a comedy spot, even though I see that as a dramedy show.
Yeah.
And I love that show. It
Me
is
too.
So good. And so we rewrote that. And so I felt like that was a great, right? That also I had done Fox before that, so that pilot. But I think when I look back at it, I kind of think it's really atrocious, actually.
Oh, the pilot? But it got you in, though. That's all that
got
matters.
Me in. The bar must have been really low that year. but yeah, so I think like that, because Writers on the Verge really launched our career, I feel like that Nurse Jackie is the spec script, and then I think we had to submit a pilot as well.
Yeah, an original.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting you say that, because I was in a Nickelodeon fellowship. That's kind of like what got me my start. And I always tell people, like, you know, upcoming writers, I'm like, fellowships is the fastest way to get staffed. And so if I was an upcoming writer, I would damn near get my scripts together, take Script Anatomy, take the UCLA online writing class, and like just get to writing, get to entering contests and enter fellowships as fast as possible. Because I think I entered for like 4 years before I got in, because it's so few people.
Yeah.
But that was the fastest way to get staffed. Do you believe that also?
100%. It is the fast track for sure.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's competitive. I mean, I think different years, there's like 1,200 to 1,500 to 1,800 to 2,200 or more, who knows, who apply to the various ones. And a lot of people, I will say, had been submitting multiple times before getting in. I don't want to be like a total ass and say I got in the first time. I did, though.
Oh my God.
But the reason why, and I'm going to do a little, I'm going to say, is because I had written features before.
Right.
And then I had started building my company at the same time that I was starting to go into TV.
Yeah.
So I already knew so much about structure and understood, like I'd already cut my teeth in features.
Yeah.
So that's why it wasn't like I wrote my first script. No,
right.
I had written a lot of feature scripts. It just happened to be my first spec. And my first time submitting. But I think it is important to keep throwing out those boomerangs as many as possible. And you never know how many or which ones are going to come back. And it may be a random thing that doesn't seem to align with the boomerang you sent out. But that's what you have to do. And I think everyone should be submitting to those.
And also quickly, just adding on to that, you wrote a Nurse Jackie. I had wrote a Insecure.
Mm-hmm.
And so learning how to write a spec, which is something your managers don't want you to do because they can't make money off of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I always tell people, like, that's the job, though.
You're right.
Like, when I got staffed on Flatbush on Showtime, Flatbush Misdemeanors, I had to write, like, and study those scripts. And having wrote that spec, I knew what to do because you're studying Insecure and the structure and the language. So do you think like more upcoming writers should write specs?
I think they should. I think it's hard to entice them if they're not going to submit to the fellowships. But then again, a lot of the fellowships don't even accept a spec anymore. They're going to like straight to pilots because they're trying to cut out the men from the boys. However, what you said is 100% right. You have to be, the job is to mimic somebody else's voice, to understand what their structure is, the kind of act outs they do, what those voices are, how many pages that is, how many scenes are in that. And so every writer should challenge themselves to write one of those because it will really give you confidence as well that you can write in somebody else's voice. So we did another one as well, which was Mad Men, which we wrote program.
Oh, so good.
Which was so great because it is this very specific voice. I remember being like, you know, really intensely like focused on that because the bar was high. It was a challenge. So yeah, write specs, try it, you know, and then submit to the programs that do ask for specs. But I know I've heard showrunners say they get frustrated that writers don't know how to mimic the voice of their show. Everyone's an auteur, you know?
Yeah.
And everybody wants that. But like the reality is, it's not easy to sell a pilot, but even if you sell a pilot, it's not easy for that thing to go.
Yep.
So the job, the work is in writing on other people's shows.
That's right.
And also, sorry, I'm going to kick into another little sidebar of it, which is that I have seen this happen to people where they staff once or not at all, and then they get a show. Nobody really wants to hire you.
Mm.
You're at an EP level, but you don't have the foundation, the experience. Yeah. To carry that title.
Yeah.
So it's not always helpful if you don't have that kind of foundation, I feel like. So I've seen that happen and it's, you know, it don't cart before the horse and get your career too far ahead before you're really ready to.
Mm-hmm.
And also because of the situation of the industry now, so many people don't have set experience. And I know a lot of showrunners will be like, I can't hire. Yeah. And it's like, and it's tough because it's not right. But hopefully now like there's, still, I think the mandates are only like 3 writers to come onto set. But it sucks because they often say, well, you can pay your way to set. It's like, really?
Right.
Okay.
Wait, pay your way to set? What does that mean?
I almost did that.
Wait, what does it mean?
I almost did that, but it was during COVID. So like
you have to pay your own plane ticket if you're...
Well, yeah, I was about to go. I was like, I'm going to just pay my way to get over there. But I mean, when you shouldn't have to, though.
You shouldn't have to.
Like, I got an episode.
You shouldn't have to when people have multiple houses and yachts and they're like being so stingy and greedy with the money and they're not giving it to any of us who do the work on the shows that make them rich. And we need that experience. We have to be training showrunners, like people to go up the food chain and become showrunners. And it's like these people that they can't get jobs sometimes because they don't have set experience. So that's a difficulty that we have to continue to fight in the industry.
That makes sense.
So how was your first staffing experience? And was that with your writing partner?
Yeah. So I've done everything with my writing partner and we still... working together all these years later. Some relationships don't last.
Yeah.
I also have like a 20-year marriage with a husband.
And you need to write a book on how to keep relationships going.
And my husband would be like, yeah, right. Because I'm not an easy person.
Well, none of it is.
But I mean, I think that part of it is there's a way to be in a partnership. Yeah. But sorry, I'm forgetting the actual first time on the job. Well, we did a show for USA and, you know, they continually rebranded themselves. And so we were on it for the second season only. And they had fired the entire staff from the first season and got a new showrunner and new people. So then, you know, you're revamping the show a bit together. Yeah. It was a great experience. And sadly, I didn't have anything to compare it to because I didn't know that I had like the nicest, kindest showrunner ever. Peter Ocko, shout out to him. He was such a lovely person and it was a really great room. But I was still absolutely terrified because you think that there's so much more pressure on you as a staff writer than there actually is.
Facts.
Nobody's expecting you to carry the weight on your shoulders. So if you're just talking a little bit here and there and you're trying hard and you're finding other ways to be useful besides pitching 24/7 in the room, that's success. I know people, and sometimes they don't even know it themselves because you hear it through people that you know that hired them and were not happy, that if you're a staff writer and you are talking constantly in the room and you are pitching too much, unless you feel the vibe and it's welcome, that can be a bad thing because you're not real, you might not have the knowledge. I mean, sometimes people do. Sometimes people come really ready and know more than us, they're more and operating at a higher level than a staff writer, which is great. But I know people that have like not gotten that next job and don't understand why. And I'm like, I know why. It's because you were overstepping and that person was unhappy and they weren't able to tell you that, which I disagree with because I do think that as a leader, you should let people know what they're doing right and what they're not doing right and let them course correct. Don't just punish people and be like, okay.
Like after it's over, like, all right, well, done with you. Yeah.
Yeah. You didn't get a script. You don't know why. You didn't get asked back. You don't know why or whatever. But yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting because what you don't realize is like being in that room, you're working with people who are either going to have another show or like that writer's going to have a show. Like just, you know, that happened to me. I was a consultant on Blind Spot in season two on Stars, and one of the other consultants, he ended up having the show on Netflix, and then he was like, I want you to be in the room. So it's like, it's interesting how you don't think about that, but you really need to be on your best behavior and actually need to be like bringing something to the table. You know, like you can't just sit there and just, you know, like that's not a good idea. It's like and one, like you know, you have to bring something to the table always.
Absolutely,
and be pleasant.
But I like the point you just made, which is that you never know who in the room is gonna have something. And I sometimes see younger writers like kind of kissing ass to people at a certain level.
Yeah.
But it's like just because they're at that level doesn't mean that anything they're gonna ever have a show.
Right.
This writer's assistant could have a show.
Yeah.
You know what
That's
I mean?
Right.
So like who are you nice to? I find that too, and I don't know, there's sometimes actors, writers that probably listen, but I'm always surprised when a writer or an actor isn't nice to anybody who's not like at a certain level.
Yeah.
Which I remember when I was like a lower level, I'm like, do you realize like people are gonna be able to hire you or have shows like just because they're not, and if they're you're an complete asshole as an actor, like it gets around to every single person in the room and other people will call from different shows and say, how is that person? They were a nightmare. They did X, Y, and Z, and then they won't get cast. So it just, it's all around, like works as a whole, like people talk.
Yeah. Which could be good and bad.
Right.
Cause one of the things I did realize coming from music industry, it's like, it seems like in the music industry, it was always like this block of like, I'm not handing this song to somebody until you sign with me. And so it was always like this like abusive relationship. But in TV, it was interesting where obviously nobody wants to read your shit. But like, it seemed like they would be like, oh, you should meet this person. And I don't know if that's because writers so hard to become a writer that it's like we do. I felt like it was this kindness of like, oh, if you're doing something, you know, and you're making your way, they'll be like, oh, you should meet this person, or I think you should meet that person, or you should do this, like, which was really a shock for me in the TV industry, actually.
Yeah. Well, that's important, though. Like, lifting people up the ladder along with and helping people, connecting people, supporting, mentoring, all of those things.
Which brings us to script anatomy, which...
Oh, well, let's get into script anatomy.
Okay.
We definitely want to hear about the inception of it and like how it began, because it sounds like that you started it at the beginning of like your writing career, early on in your writing career. Now, I can personally vouch for script anatomy because I am an alumnus.
Yay. Yes, I know that actually, because I remember your name on...
And I took, when I first moved to LA, I was very lucky to find script anatomy. I mean, this is the time before TikTok. You know what I mean? Like we thought that information was moving fast then. It wasn't. It was like,
slow,
you know,
it
felt like the time of the fax machine in comparison to now.
I think I might still be on the fax machine. Okay, <so. laughs>
But the classes I took were absolutely incredible. And I have to say, like any other kind of like script writing classes I've taken have really been incomparable to the experience that I had there. And there's a constant roster of amazing writers. Actually, my goal buddy, Hannah Rosner, I think teaches a pilot
amazing.
Writing class.
Hannah's love her. Awesome. I love her.
And also it's like the other thing that's really interesting is that it's like, I still like remember the names of the people who I was in those classes with. And like I follow them online and I have watched their careers progress. And like that really, really says something.
Thank you. That's actually one of my mandates of of continuing the business, which was one that I wanted to give people, well, going backwards, a hands-on applicable process, which I think is why the classes are different than other places. You know, you go to some schools or classes and they're talking, they're only reading stuff on the day, whereas we go away and we read your stuff and give you in-depth specific notes about what you're doing right and wrong. We have lectures with corresponding development tools so that you have a process to follow. And all the instructors are working writers or in some way, shape, or form, but a lot of them, I mean, we have people that are at every single level. But one of my mandates was also, besides having community, because that's really important, was to, I would not keep the business open if writers weren't succeeding, because I have a lot of pride and I would feel like a snake oil salesman. So having successful writers was important, and it has happened. And so I feel like that is a testament. I think it can shorten your learning curve. It can take your overnight success takes 10 to 20 years into a lot less time because you're like getting the hang of what you're doing a lot earlier. So I feel, and I mean, I've seen it. My students have had a shorter time than I did, but I also taught before that. I taught features for 5 years. I really was already an instructor, and the inception of Script Anatomy was my husband and I went to India for 2 years and lived there, and I was sobbing because it was like living in a parallel universe, and I was like, what am I doing here? I want to be here, like making things happen. But that was a pivotal moment for me as well, psychologically. India was. But when we came back to the States, it was actually, we were done after 2 years and we were on the East Coast and we're figuring out what are we going to do? And I did not want to go back and teach features for somebody else. And my husband was like, you should start your own school. All your students still want to work with you. And I was like, what are you talking about? I don't know how to run a business. I don't know how to do this. And he's like, yeah, you'll figure it out and you should do it. And then, like, that night, it was actually Valentine's Day.
Romantic.
So the inception was on Valentine's Day? Some movie shit.
Oh my God. This is a rom-com?
And it was a rom-com. And so I was like, he was working in his office and I was in bed and I was like looking for names. And then I was like, Script Anatomy. And then I was like, Googled it. And I was like, nobody has that. And I said, what do you think about Script Anatomy?
Fire.
And he's like, that's great. And so then, and that was it, you know?
That's
and
dope.
Then it started kind of there. And then I taught the first class that I ever taught myself. After Writers on the Verge, and I think I got staffed while I was end of being on that.
That
6 week class.
Can you imagine running a school right now, Saeed?
No, but
let me tell you. I think the only way it works is that I started when I was barely starting out.
Yeah.
And sometimes it would be just, I mean, for a while, it was just me waking up early, then going to the show. At lunch, I would like do some of the work. Then at night, because I was doing everything. I was posting the classes, doing the website, teaching the classes, reading the work. And then slowly that built from, and very quickly, from one class the first year to two classes to six to like 11 to now over 100.
Oh my God.
But I have a team.
Wow.
Thank you. I mean, I love it. I realize that I have an entrepreneurial brain and I like doing it. I like running a business. And your writing is your business as well, right? Which people don't understand. But anyway, that's kind of how it went. And I'm lucky that I have really great instructors and a team of, I don't know, like 10 people. Some of them are not even on the website because they are private and don't want to be. But from, you know, the social media to the website to everything, like running, you know, putting the classes together, getting the instructors hooked up with that, dealing with everything. I mean, everything. And I have to give a shout out to Kevin Townsley, who's my number two at the company. And I really, he does a lot for my company, as does my husband has stepped in and helped too, because he was like, you need to like step this up more, but you don't have any time and I'm going to help you because now we need to do, there's things that we need to do that you don't want to do. Cause then you got to pay to revamp that website, pay for the little bit of advertising and all that. And I'm always like, I don't know. And it actually doubled the school.
But I mean,
so my husband was right.
That's dope. But at the same time, the word of mouth, like I just, Script Anatomy was something that was a word of mouth buzzing. Like people I knew were coming out of there. Like, you know what I'm saying? I'm like, oh, I'm taking Script Anatomy. So I think, you know, you did a great job with that. And in reality, because I went to film school in college, and I didn't really learn how to write scripts. Like, you know what I'm saying? You learn a lot of film theory.
Yeah.
And you're not you're not taught by...
like working screenwriters.
Exactly.
Right. You got to go into the body. I always say that. Like, do you want to go and get... surgery by somebody who's just reading the books and talking about it, or somebody who's actually performed the act.
Please no.
That's what I always say. But yeah, I think it's like a writer knows how to go in, and then also it's important to know again what you're doing right, what isn't working, and why. And so we pitch things too. But the theory of it is what I love that you mentioned, because I had gone to classes early on in my career, and I would be like, oh, this makes sense. The theory of it, it all makes, this means that we need this, you need that. Oh, that's what that is. And then I would go home all amped up and excited, but have a blank page. And I was like, I don't know what to do with all this knowledge I have. And that's what I wanted to translate for people and make applicable.
Mm-hmm. Which is smart, because a lot of people can't afford that. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And also, like, you know, when I went back, took classes, I had a job, like I had a 9 to 5. So it was like, you know, I needed something that could have hours that fit around my job. So if I'm in my 30s and I'm, you know, and so to me, that's dope. Like, this is something that writers should really do. Cause I do feel like you need classes to have deadlines. That's like, if it wasn't for deadlines, especially if you have a job, like I always run into writers who are like, how do you do it? And it's like, bro, you need deadlines. Yeah, and if you're paying for something, that's going to make you fit fucking deadline.
Let a fire under your butt. Yeah. But also it's like, you are learning something, you're elevating your craft. Facts. And I think it's so competitive now. There are so many people that want to do this, that you have to elevate your craft. You have to become really great at what you do and be undeniable because somebody else is doing it. And if you're not, then you're not going to compete. That is the truth. Yeah. And then you're meeting other people. You're meeting your peers, and you're all going to rise together, because I think success happens in numbers. And that's why you're seeing, like you're saying, oh, my classes, and I've watched them, and they're all going up the food chain. And it happens at different times for different people, but everyone is like supporting and helping, and here's my agent, and oh, check out my manager, and let me read your script and give you notes, you know?
Yeah, the other thing is that it really makes a difference, like when you take one of these classes, right? Like when you see how dedicated the other classmates are, right? That they're not just like taking it on a whim. They're like, oh, you know, kind of thinking about writing a class. They're not fucking around. Like they're like dead ass serious. Like it really raises the bar, and it makes you bring your A game to class, I think. So I really love this idea of talking about like your writing is your business. Did you find that building this business made you smarter about your writing as a business?
I mean, I would like to say yes in some ways, but I also know that that's a work in progress, really, because one of the things that, yes, because I would understood early on that when I did the program, the Writers on the Verge, they, and I loved it and it was great and it helped me with everything, but they chose the script that we should write. Like we pitched them five ideas and then they chose the script. And I'm definitely a person who more and more and more is like, no, I don't want to do this. And yes, I want to do this. And, but you're new, right? Yeah. So I remember that they had picked, I think half the people, and then they picked us a spec that we should do. And I can't remember, it was still a Mad Men, but I went home that night and I was like, I don't think that's the Mad Men that we should write. I think we should write this other one that we pitched.
Yeah.
So then I had to go and say, we want to write this other one instead. And then you feel like you're being difficult.
Bad, yeah.
So then when it came to this, the pilot, I had the same sense, but I didn't say anything.
Your gut.
And what happened was, it was a pilot that was sort of lighter fare. Mm. And so that was the first show we got on that matched that same, you know, spec and, or, you know, pilot spec, and that matched the show. And then I feel like that's something we've been fighting our way out of our entire career. So that also started to make me look at that way, but also that like your reps do work for you.
Yeah.
And that's hard for people to get wrap their head around, that they're there to help and support you, and you don't need to do what script they tell you to write and whatever. You have to trust your gut. And so, but now I'm at this point where I'm like, overall deals may not be a thing that we see the future, as many of.
Nah.
So, well, but what is my slate anyway?
Yeah.
I was talking to an EP who's ran shows, who was like, I've got my slate. And we sort of started building a slate over the break, or over the strike, over the forced break.
It was a hard break.
Forced hard hiatus that we were forced into. And so we've opened up too, to starting to work with other people who are awesome, and building our slate. But it's a constant thing. And certainly I feel like I do run that ship more now because mm-hmm. because when you're running a business, you're like in control of all that, and you still have people and you're weighing in. But I think you are responsible more than anybody else. So don't rely on your agents and managers to tell you what to do. Like, yeah, sit together and strategize, but you have to know where you want to go and what you want. Mm-hmm. And so I will be very vocal about that. We want this, this, and this. Mm-hmm. If we can't get this, this, and this, the one thing we must get is this. Mm-hmm. You know, go negotiate for that. Knowing we're trying to get everything, but this is the deal breaker for me, you know, mm-hmm. which might be like, go to set on your own for 4 months. I really don't want to do that. You know, it's exhausting, and I think other writers should have the opportunity to go to set, but some people are just sending one entity over there, and it's not a great time, I don't think, unless you love it more than anything. And I love it, but not enough to be in Toronto for 4 months.
How many scripts should an upcoming TV writer have? Because I think one problem I also see is like, you know, like I was at Austin Film Festival. I was there the year before. Yeah. And so they'll have a little badge. It'll have their script. I'll be like, is this the same one you had last year? Is this a new script? And then they're like, oh, no, this is the same one I had last year. And I'm like, okay. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what I'm saying? So let me just ask you, just for the upcoming writers out there, that, and sometimes they get so bogged down with one script. Yeah. It's like, bro, this is your first script. You need to write scripts. So how many scripts should a upcoming writer be in their mind, TV writer, working on? Mm-hmm.
They need to have completed 2 scripts that are amazing, mm-hmm. that can staff them on 2 different types of things. And then, and that's at a minimum. Yeah, I mean, I think it's better if you have 3 or 4. Facts. Again, it's going to take you a long time to get them to that shape. And then you are going to have the graveyard of scripts that you might be able to pick up down the road too. Like once things start happening, people will pick those up. Mm-hmm. I tend to not do that. I leave them in the graveyard for the most part and move to the next thing. But what you said about just working and reworking and reworking that same script, you've got to move on from that. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's good also in classes is to like jump to something new, and you can always go back because you learn from going through the process again on a new piece of material. And if you're just circling around that same thing, you're actually not evolving as a writer as much mm-hmm. as you think you are. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, what you have to ask yourself is, what kind of shows do I want to be on? Mm-hmm. Which that's what I started doing. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm still trying to get there. We'll talk about one of the ones that just got canceled that is killing me right now. Yeah. But what kind of shows do I want to be on, and what samples match that? And if you don't have that sample, you better go write that sample, especially as a lower level mm-hmm. and even mid. But they want that sample to match more because it's just an easier fit. Whereas when you're not that, it doesn't have to match. As the higher up you get, I don't think it has to match exactly. It's a different game at that point. But yeah, if you can have at least 2 great pilot scripts, maybe even a feature if you also write feature, and if you in between, you know, you have to write another script that's going to get you this other thing as well, because that's what the agent's going to be looking for, write a short story.
Yeah,
write an essay, write a playwright. We did. Now, I lied about the graveyard on that particular script though, because that short story that we had written was like a 17-page short story. Mm-hmm. We were super passionate about it. Our agent at the time, not our current amazing one, was this guy's no longer in the business either. Mm. Unfortunately, he was Me Too'd. So he had told us, "You don't need to you don't need to write that as a pilot." But I was like, But it's gotten such good attention. Mm. And the first time that it went out, we were already on a show, but this show that it was a Vina Sood show. She had read it and wanted to meet with us. And I was like, yes, this was the goal, to go from this sort of thing to this. Mm-hmm. But we were already on a show, so that didn't work out. But we literally wrote that script. I think it went out for the first time this year.
Wow.
And it got me on the job, which was the job that was supposed to change my life, but got canceled after the strike.
Oh my God.
And it was a Western, and it was edgy, noir.
Yeah.
It was fucking so cool for Amazon. And they were so excited about everything about it. Morgan Freeman was producing.
Oh my God.
It was just everything. It was like magic. And I'm not a super like always positive and think everything's going to work out for the best. I'm like, I don't know. I've seen how shit goes down. Yeah. But I thought, this show's definitely coming
slam
back
dunk.
After the strike.
Sound like a
it's definitely
dunk.
Coming back. They're so excited about every piece of material. It's the best thing I've ever been on. and it got canceled.
Oh my God.
How far along was it in the process?
They had already done a mini room like a year before. And then they had done a room for 4 weeks. And then Allie and I came on for the 3 weeks before the strike. So they needed more help. Mm-hmm. And so we came on and I worked my ass off, up in the morning, in the afternoon, at night, like reading everything, reading the script multiple times, reading like the sort of like template of what they wanted to do each episode, read everything over and over, brainstorming, like killing myself. And I have to say, we did a really good job. And they were really happy with us. So that's what you got to do if you want to get to that point. But they just canceled it. I think it's because there's something else out there like it, unfortunately.
Isn't there always?
Even though it's not, and we'll talk about that later, but even though it's not going to be as good, I really feel so confident about this show. And I don't feel that way about everything I've been on, for sure. But the two shows that I've loved the most did not go. And that was one of them. And that was the one, guys, that was going to change everything.
How do you deal with that? Because I do have writer friends. I was lucky enough to get on a show that actually came out, but then it got canceled at the year after. So Flatbush missed me. Like, my episode ain't even 6 months later. The episode isn't even on Paramount right now because Showtime got swallowed, and I don't know what the fuck is going on with the show right now.
Yeah.
But how do you deal with that? Because I do have friends who I'll be like, oh yeah, you in the room. And then they're like, yes. And then it doesn't get picked up. And like, they spent time in a room and they don't get the IMDb, especially for a new writer.
Because
the credits, right? Because we're like, this is our stats. Like, as a And so it's like, how do you deal with that? And how would you suggest, is there, you got any advice for those?
Well, how I deal with it is I do have a lot of credits below me. And I've been on the two rooms that didn't get on. So I've been on 12 shows.
Yeah.
And oh my God, 12 shows.
That's why I said 10 plus.
10 plus. Yeah. And so I know I'm a hustler and I'm going to try to work my ass off. I also know that I have a really amazing representative. So I feel like he's going to do magic for me too. And we'll always try to figure it out. But I have to say, and I have three examples of this happening.
Please.
And this is one of them. We can talk about the others after we go to what should younger people, newer people do.
Yeah.
But within 24 hours, so we were on a Zoom with that room and we were told the show was canceled. And I actually, guys, shed a tear.
Yeah.
Of course.
And I don't believe there's any crying in baseball, but that one fucking hurt. And then the next day, within 24 hours, we were on a Zoom with a show we had done 2 years ago that we finished December 15th of 2021 that still hasn't dropped. It drops December 7th, and that shows the room's getting picked up. So I didn't have a job, and I did have a job.
That's crazy.
Within 24 hours.
The ups and downs.
Yeah, so the ups and downs. I mean, there's times when I get really mad about the ups and downs, and you have to allow yourself to feel that and vent and be pissed off and, throw a fit and have a glass of wine. And then you pick up and move on because you have to. But with younger people who are like, I need that credit. The truth is, you actually still do have that credit.
Okay.
Because no one's looking at your IMDb. Okay. I mean, we all look at each other's IMDb and we go into IMDb.
I'm glad you said that. Oh my God.
Yeah. And we go into IMDb Pro and we're like, what the hell is this person doing? Who's repping them? But the truth is, there's a studio list or something like that, right? I don't know. I think that's what it's called. But it's got all of those credits on there. The thing is if people are looking up at IMDb, that show that hasn't dropped yet that you already did, or the three shows, credits, right? So your reps are sending out your list of the things you've done, and no one's really looking at IMDb because it's not updated.
That
makes sense. So feel good about that.
Do you hear that, writers? All my friends, a sigh of relief on the web.
I know. But you also have your bios online to mitigate that issue too. Look at what I am.
We do. You want to talk about the state of TV a little bit? With the popularity and the difficulty of prestige TV and the popcorn TV? You want to talk a little bit?
Prestige versus popcorn. Okay, my friend Saeed really a wordsmith today, isn't he?
Prestige versus popcorn is good.
Yes, please.
Popcorn TV tends to get eyeballs sometimes, and it doesn't mean it's any good.
Yeah.
People like to consume things that they can also like be on their phones at the same time or drink a glass of wine and and fold the laundry or cook or whatever and not really pay attention. Prestige television, the writing is so damn good. It's complex writing, so you have and storytelling, so you have to be there and you have to be paying attention and you want to be paying attention.
Yeah.
But for whatever reason, you know, I think it's easier to get those eyeballs on the garbage. And so people watch it and it does really well sometimes, whereas sometimes shows that are extremely brilliant don't do as well. And my fear and concern is prestige television, it just still does happen, like Succession, but that prime time of, you know, Sopranos, Six Feet Under, Mad Men, and The Wire, and all the things that were, you know, Sex and the City even, which was like high end, you know, at the time. That stuff sometimes can be harder to make. Certainly period pieces, which people actually do really love, but people are like, no, nobody wants to watch a period. That thing too is that executives, and this drives me crazy, they hear a word, a buzzword or catchphrase from somebody, and then it goes through like wildfire.
Yes.
Everybody wants like lighter things right now. No, not everybody does want lighter things. Right. I want some dark shit, even in dark times.
Yeah.
Sometimes to watch something really dark makes you feel better about the your state shit. Of your own shit. So it's like, why not watch that? But I mean, you know, I do think even if this show doesn't get made and you've written a script that is like amazing and brilliant and prestige, that's the kind of script that will get you attention. I mean, there is one script that we've written that gets us every job.
That's fine.
Except for that last one, because that one was actually a period piece that got us onto the Western. And, you know, it's hard because people are like, oh, it's period. I don't even want to read it.
Why are people like that about period? Because some of the most popular shows are period shows.
Downton Abbey, Mad Men.
Oh, my. Bridgerton.
Yellowstone.
Bridgerton.
And all this shit is
People love that, like, petticoat porn kind of stuff. I was, like, at a wedding last night, and, like, this couple who I'm friends with, I'm talking, like, uber cool, in the music industry, like, Swedish, managed Swedish pop stars, like, cool people. They were like, we got to get home and watch the latest episode of 1883.
Yeah, that's my point. That's my point.
So why are people so down on
Well, I think the industry is down on it because it's expensive, right? So it's costly.
Nice.
And then they do think it's harder to get eyeballs on, but then unless it's a Western, I guess, now it's like a whole thing. But it's expensive, I think, and they don't feel like it's as easy as a sell. And it's like, that's the sad part of it. But you know, genre stuff is expensive too, and I think it's just genre fans are out there and they're very vocal about it, and I don't think period fans are like, give us our period stuff.
No, they're not. if I even bring up like I'm writing a period piece, I think people will try to talk me out of that as fast as possible.
They always try to. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing too, is you always have to gauge. Like that's a thing. Like, well, you don't really need a period piece. I mean, you already have that short story, but like that is, and by the way, there's a storyline in the period piece that we wrote this year that got us onto the Western. And I think it was that storyline that was not in the short story, but that was in there. And then things change and evolve.
Yeah.
And so it can get you a job.
Yeah.
You know, we don't always, everything that you write, we always want to sell everything we write, but everything you write needs to be a sales tool for your reps to get you a job.
Yep. Yeah.
And that brings me to pitching.
That's right.
Yeah. And so, you spend all your life, writer life, writing scripts. And then when it's time to pitch, they don't want the script. They want you to write pitch deck and all this shit.
Suddenly, which, you're a graphic designer.
Yes.
Suddenly I'm on Canva.
Yeah.
I'm like taking Canva instructions. I'm trying to find cool font. Like I'm like, why? What does this have to do with anything?
Exactly.
But there was no learning curve for that. And I think, do you have any advice on pitching and stuff like that, because you have pitch shows and stuff. So any pitching advice out there?
Well, I think people's pitching styles will evolve as you like go along. But what I'm learning more and more is it changes all the time, right? So it was like COVID was like, definitely you better have a pitch deck. Because before that you'd be out there with just your pages, right? And then some people are like, you shouldn't have pages, but I'm like, they're a security blanket. I can look at you and do the pitch, but in case I have an aneurysm, I need to look at the page again to remember where I'm at.
Yeah.
Right. But But now you know, COVID, I feel like, made you have to have a pitch deck, and that's the whole thing. And I also am like rolling my eyes going like, why do we have to do this? This is craziness. But I think shorter, the better.
Yeah,
I think 15 minutes rather than 25 to 30 to more. I think conversational, which is a really difficult skill, because I'm like the kind of person who's like, I need to know exactly what I'm saying and I need to memorize it. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I'm only now getting better at going like, okay, you don't have to get in every single little thing. You're going to miss something and they're going to ask questions and you're going to have the answers for those. So the more conversational you're telling a story, but a very good friend of mine, this reminds me, I have to reach out to him because we were on LinkedIn a second ago. Like, you know, he was a former senior vice president of drama development at a major studio network. And he told me one time about pitching, and like, everybody's style is different. Some people are like really outgoing and some people are like, let me tell you a little story,
right?
You know, or they just start going, oh yeah, so I have this buddy and he was in a hotel one night and so they think they're listening to a personal story, and then suddenly they realize they're listening to the pitch show. And they've already been in, they're already drawn in. So I think that's interesting too.
You say your style is?
I think that changes too. I feel like I often am more dynamic and like passionate, but I also feel like it's about slowing down more now and making sure I hit those story points emotionally. And so there are levels to it, but you can't be too performative, because then they're going to be like acted at, you know? So you want to draw them in. So I'm trying to like more do that. But one of the things that you mentioned about no one wants the script anymore, I actually was just told, and I think this is a problem or something that has been birthed out of the strike, which is like, nobody knows what they want right now, right? No one's buying, but some people are buying, but they don't know. And so I heard from a very big producer that we're working with another high level EP, that they want, you should write the script. Because and then we'll see what it looks like when we get the script, if we're just going to send the script out versus have you pitch it and then leave the script behind. So that might be a thing, but then I'm like, but then that might become so flooded where they have to read so many scripts, so then they want to listen to pitches again. Like, it's always about like the whims of wherever they are at psychologically on the other side of the table, I think.
Yeah, I actually told my reps I wanted to do one in one, because I was just, you know, I had pitched something. And I was like, and this is prior to the strike. This was a horrible year for
selling
shows anyway. but I just felt like something is in the execution of it. Like, and it's hard to get comedic tone, you know? So it's just like, I'm trying to explain the tone, but I'm like, man, if just read, even if it's 10 pages, it's like, oh, I get the execution of this. Because I do feel like even with the White Lotus, right? Like, it's a lot of that is in the execution, the dialogue, the way it is. It's not just this show where it's these people that show up at, like, you know what I'm saying?
Because, so like, if you just heard the idea, it could sound like a soap opera.
100%. Yeah, it's not that high concept.
No.
Yeah. Right, you know? So it could sound very low level and not as fun as it is.
So I would like it because, you know, like, I'll hear these stories where it's like, even Mad Men, like, he had that script forever, HBO passed. But at least he had the script for the pilot. And it's like, you can read it and decide if you like it or not.
Yeah.
Because, you know, saying you have like an ad salesman thing obviously wasn't the most popular thing, you know, because it was. So, you know, I wish it would kind of go back to that, but who knows? So,
and that there was just a very simple format that it was like, everybody was on the same playing field in terms of the pitch has to only be 15 minutes.
Yeah.
These are the things you need to hit,
yeah.
and then deck or no deck, and then we'll decide. Rather than you're like going, well, God, that guy, he pitched for 40 minutes and they sold it.
Right.
Well, she pitched for 45 and didn't, and she pitched for 10 minutes and got it. You know, like, there's no rhyme or reason, and I think that's what's frustrating.
Yeah. Any tips for pitching on Zoom? Because it's a totally different thing than pitching in person.
Yeah. So if you're a person who needs pages, you never want to be looking down. So what I do is
put it up.
I put it up and I move everybody over to the side. So I can only see like the people like down in a row, you know,
smart.
See them. And I'm looking at the camera. And of course I'm scrolling up so that I'm, you know, even if I'm like, right now I'm looking in your eyes, but if I'm looking just a little lower, you probably don't know that, especially on Zoom. So that's how I do it. Yeah. And then, you know, I think tonally you have to be more engaged like this rather than like out there, because you'll be like a rodeo clown, like, you know.
And are you using visuals when you pitch on Zoom?
We do have a deck. So usually one of us will run the deck, or one of the pitches that we did, I think last year, somebody from the production company ran the deck for us. Nice. So you can always do that. Like, can you run this deck? And we need to go through it. And then sometimes like Ali will do it, because like, it just depends on how it is. I think one time we were both switching off and that was a little hard, and I think I messed up. But yeah, the deck. And then also it's, well, how much should we have on the deck? Yeah. Some people only have like 10 pages on their deck. And then there's sometimes where it's just like, you can animate it. So it's like constantly changing and adding things and whatever. And you're like, is that too much? Right. Or is that going to engage them? Or is that, you know, I don't know. Like, it's going to be different for everybody, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Some people want a lot of visuals and some people don't.
Some people don't want to pitch deck at all. Like, that's another thing. It's just like, you know, and that's the thing too, is like, there is no correct answer.
Right.
Like, I've asked different people sometimes, like, what do you like? And some will say, well, I don't really give a fuck about a pitch deck. And then some will be like, well, it depends on the show. And, you know, so
I will give a little tip for people who want to, we do pitch classes, of course.
Fire.
But if you want to listen to a really good pitch, he's a very good pitcher. He's my old boss, DJ Nash from A Million Little Things. Fire. And he did A Million Little Things podcast. I think it's still called that, but you could obviously Google and whatever. And in one of the, I don't know which number it
episodes,
is, in one of the episodes, we'll link it. Pitches it exactly how he pitched it.
Oh, wow.
And I remember asking him, because I'd heard he was a good pitcher and the show was very beautiful and emotional. The pilot script was amazing. And I said, would you pitch your, because he was talking about the pitch, would you pitch that in the room for us? And he did it.
Wow.
And it was like, okay. Like, it was a master class on pitching.
Wow.
And some people are really good at it and some people aren't, and everyone's style is different, but it would be good for people to just listen to that. It's because you barely get to ever have that peek behind the curtain and hear how somebody else does it.
Yeah, it's almost like you do have to like do some research and hear other people doing it. Otherwise, because then you could be like, ooh, I kind of like this. I kind of like that
style. Yeah.
Yeah. So you've written features. Do you like writing features or TV more now in your career?
Well, I could say that right now, because we just got more notes on a feature that I thought was done, that I'm not liking that today. But I like them both for different reasons. And I think what I love about writing for TV is, and I miss it, and I'm excited to get back into the room. I'm hoping it's going to happen next week. Is I miss the, and I didn't always like rooms, by the way, guys. I didn't always like that whole process.
Mm-hmm.
But I think everyone's different. And as you have more experience and you are more confident and you are speaking more and whatever, it's like different however you're feeling throughout your career. But now I really like being in a room for the pitching, for the people. I like writing the show, but you're writing somebody else's voice.
Mm-hmm.
So what I sometimes love to be able to then go back to is write a feature that is not somebody else's voice. It's our voice, that doesn't have somebody else saying you have to do it this way, or 25 different people. You have very few people weighing in with notes, rather than like some shows, you have the production company weighing in with notes, and then the studio, and then the network, and then sometimes there's even an actor weighing in with notes, and also the showrunner has weighed in or not or whatever. So it's like, it could just be super grueling.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, that piece of it is nice to not have when you're writing a feature.
Do you believe the theory that the TV industry is shrinking next year?
This is where I actually do become hopeful, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's definitely going to shrink a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely think it can also have a bit of a rebound. We don't know what's going to happen. I've been hearing this particular studio has been, or network has been on sale, or streaming platform has been on sale for a while. We just recently heard that Disney's acquiring Hulu, right? So, but there's still going to be two different entities.
Right.
We hear there's people going to be doing less shows, less jobs. Maybe we did have a bubble where there was like 500-600 shows at one point, and it's not going to be that much again. But I don't know. Yes, I think there is going to be a bit of a shrinkage factor for a second, but I think it will straighten itself out and rebound, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not very good at, I thought the show that I was on was going to come back and it didn't. So I don't know about my psychic abilities, but I do think that it's going to be painful for a minute, and then we're going to see some positive things happening. And again, we're going to see more agencies getting rid of people. We're going to see, I think, management or agency companies like acquiring another one. I think that like things are happening, but the dust will settle and people need content. And right now there's not a lot on.
Nothing really on. I mean, you know, it's funny because my mom is the one that got me into even TV, because she used to just watch. Now, my dad didn't watch TV, but my mom watched TV all the time, like Sex and the City, Grey's Anatomy, Ally McBeal. And all. Like, I just remember the TV being on. Like, yeah, she was into that. And yeah, like, she calls me often, like, when is my show coming back on? And that's the funny thing is, like, the trickle down that people didn't really feel in March or April or May, but now you will, because that show that will be on right now, you know, like Abbott would be on right now. Now it's not coming on the next year. And so they're like, where the fuck is my show?
Yeah, exactly.
You know? Yeah.
Well, I mean, I just, even you go into Netflix and they have a zillion things, but they have nothing. That's kind of how I sometimes feel. And so I'm watching, right now I'm watching Get Gaudy.
Oh, that somebody else just brought that up.
Someone else just said that. I guess we have to watch it.
I watch a lot of documentaries when there's nothing else on, or I'll watch some like garbage, like fun popcorn reality show sometimes, like a Selling Sunset or a Selling OC.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, what, there's nothing. I've seen everything that I'm interested in seeing. Right. And so then when something new comes on, you're like, oh yeah, let's watch that.
Yeah.
But
well, in the spirit of being hopeful about things really coming around in the new year, we would love to know more about the Pilot Palooza.
Okay, so Script Anatomy last year started where we are, annual Pilot Palooza 30-day TV writing challenge. Oh. And so this is to knock out a pilot without driving yourself crazy or, you know, overthinking it too much. But every day you'll get a lesson to read or audio, and you'll get tools to start building out your pilot. And there'll be a private platform and also a private chat for all the people who are doing the challenge together to ask each other questions or whatever. So it's really fun. We had a lot of people doing it last year. It was, I think, somewhere around 200 the first year. So it was a blast and I loved it. And we're doing it again. And we've retooled it a little bit. And then we'll be doing a rewrite challenge after that. But for Pilot Palooza, for those of you who are interested, we're going to give a 15% discount until December 31st. And you can go on now to use it. And it's,
Two writers
in caps.
Yes.
One word, just two writers in caps is the code. And I hope you join me, because it is me, quote, teaching that class. There's no feedback in this particular thing because there's too many people.
Yeah.
But obviously, it also gives you an idea of what we do at Script Anatomy, sort of how I do things.
I love that. Before we go, you kind of talked about what you're watching. So we do this thing where it's like, what are three things you're loving right now? And one is what you're watching, what you're reading, and what you're listening to. Listening to could be a podcast or music. Mm-hmm. So let's go first. Because you said Gaudy. What are you watching that you love right now?
So I am watching Gaudy. It's interesting. Get Gaudy.
Yeah.
God, I've been reading.
Yes.
I read a lot on Audible. Does that count?
I'm doing the same thing.
I read a lot of psychological thrillers on Audible, but right now I'm doing James Ellroy's The Black Dahlia.
Love that.
And so I had realized I hadn't really read anything that he's done, but I know his work. So I decided to read that, listen to that. I listened to also a lot of, I'm listening to a guy, I can't even remember his name right now, who talks about the Stoics a lot. Philosophy.
Yeah, no, Ryan Holiday.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I'm listening to him, like just like bites of him.
And Ego is the Enemy is one of my favorite books.
Yeah. I mean, everything that and I want to read his books too.
Yeah.
And by read, I mean listen. Yeah. So reading, watching, unfortunately right now, it's Get Gaudy, because I feel like I've seen everything else that's on. I don't even know the last great show that I watched, honestly. That's the sad part. So if you guys have watched anything, let me know.
Yeah.
I know. I started watching Dave.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah.
I like that.
I just started watching.
Are you on season one or two?
Two.
All right. Mm-hmm. You saw season one, though.
Yes, all of it.
I really like the, you know, coming from music, a lot of that shit is real. Like sending money to somebody to get a verse that you don't really know, but you're like hoping that they get this money and they lay that verse. Like a lot of that fuckery is true. And I really like the relationship of him and his girl in season one.
Yeah, I like that relationship too. And I like his relationship with Gata a lot. I like that character a lot.
Yeah, Gata, yeah.
And I also think it's just amazing to see like
they did this on TV? Yeah. Like, what?
Yeah. So many scenes.
Yeah. What the hell? Yeah. And also, like, wait, are guys really like this? Like, are they rolling around naked together? I don't understand that. You know where I'm at in the show now. Yeah. But like the table with the hole cut out, right? Like, it's like there's so many things like that. It was always read, watch, and listen. So I think I kind of hit that, but my reading is all listening too.
Any music you're listening to that you like right now?
You know, I'm the worst with music. I listen to whatever playlist my husband puts together, and he's so good at it. And then I'm always like, what? Who is this again? Who is this? And he's like, you never remember any of these things. But I do watch a lot of really great TV. I just feel like there hasn't really been anything new dropping, although I am behind on like The Morning Show and some of those things.
I gotta catch up with that.
Yeah.
Well, look, thank you for being on Two Writers Talking Shit. How can people get a hold of you? What is your Twitter handles or any of that if you have any?
I think their Twitter is T Bhattacharya, at T Bhattacharya. Yeah. Instagram is Tanya_Benavides_Bhattacharya. Yeah. And I wouldn't even know. My Facebook's probably just Tanya Bhattacharya.
I haven't logged into Facebook in years.
Yeah, and I need to get on TikTok because I need to get out of the, what are we talking about?
The fax machine.
The Xerox machine. Yeah. The cop fax machine.
Get out of the fax machine. Get into the TikTok.
I'm not on it either, though.
Into the new, okay.
I'm not on it either. Next year, I have to get on it, though. Mm. You know?
Yeah, me too. I feel like... Yeah. Like, we have
you
got to
spread the message over there too.
Yeah, yeah, you guys do need to do that with
your
show.
Yeah, we do.
Podcast, you guys need to do that. Yeah, so but thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure meeting both of you. You're awesome.
Been an incredible guest.
Thank you.
Right,
another dope episode. See y'all. Please continue to comment and tweet and share the podcast like you're doing.
Rate us five stars. Give us a beautiful comment.
Yeah, thank you for listening.
Thank you. Bye.
Two Writers Talking Shit is an original podcast created by Melanie Mars and Saeed Crumpler. Our producer is Kayla Guest. Our audio engineer is T. Kelly.
Listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or wherever you damn well please. All we ask is that you subscribe, rate us 5 stars, and give us a glowing review.
If you're not going to give us 5 stars or any glowing reviews, then why even log on? Save your rants for an open mic.
If you have any questions for us, and I do mean any, you can email us at twowriterstalkingshit@gmail.com. That's the number 2, and then writerstalkingshit@gmail.com.
See you next episode.
Bye.